And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, and happy Wednesday, everyone. Today is Wednesday, October 19th. You are listening to the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm joined by Darren and Kevin. You can listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts, thoughts, questions. Today, we're talking a little baseball playoffs. We're talking college football. We're talking NFL football. We'll start it off with the Yankees. They beat Cleveland in Game 5 yesterday. Stanton hits a three-run home run in the first inning. They knock out Savali in the first. They get the benefits from the rainout by resting their pitching. Cortez comes out, pitches 5 innings, never really in trouble. And then Loaisiga, Holmes, and Peralta give them a good 4 innings in relief, and the Yankees win 4-1. They're now taking on Houston as we speak. We just saw a Gurriel home run in the sixth inning. So right now the Yankees are losing 2-1, but they're competitive and they're battling Verlander. Guys, what do you think?
Great win yesterday for the Yankees. Cortez pitched a lights out game. 3 days rest, 4 days rest, it doesn't matter. He gave them everything he had. Bullpen. Gino, I hope Boone did a good job in the bullpen. Hopefully you're a little happier than you were on the podcast.
He was good. I am not happy, by the way, and I will tell you about that when you're done, Kevin.
Stanton with a big three-run home run early. Really just, I think, eased a lot of the Yankee nerves, if there were any. And the way Cortez was mowing him down, he threw strikes. That was a big thing. A little hiccup there in the third when Hicks got hurt. And there's a shock, Aaron Hicks getting hurt.
Oh, no, you're kidding me.
I know. It's amazing. Never happens. But, yeah, just a solid win. If you're a Cleveland Guardians fan, you've got to be sitting there going, why was Savali starting? He hadn't pitched in a game in 2 weeks. Where is Bieber on 3 days rest? Get Bieber in there. Even if he gets you, even if he gets you 3 innings, better than what Savali would have given you.
We talked about it the other day. Darren was telling me he thought Savali would be the better choice. I said Bieber. Listen, it could have went either way. I think either way, you were still hoping for 3 innings, and then they would go into the bullpen, but Savali never made it out of the first. So, Darren?
I didn't say he was the better choice. I said he's going to be the choice. I also thought that Cortez could have gone at least 6. He barely threw pitches. He was 60 pitches. But of course, Boone has to panic after 5. So, therefore, and then up 5-1, I don't need the Peralta-Naylor matchup. You're up 4. I don't need it. You're pitching
you today.
I don't need it. Stop with the freaking book, okay? You're up 4 runs. He's leading off the ninth. I don't need it. You want to leave him in there? You want to bring somebody? You want to dust off Ramon, see if he's got something for an inning? You want to come in with somebody else that you haven't used to see if they can help you and save these guys for the pitching the next night? I don't know what he's thinking half the time. I was fine with Holmes in the eighth because you're going up against the heart. I was fine with it. But I could not understand pulling Cortez as early as he did. You can't tell me he didn't have another inning in him. He didn't see, there's no way he said, well, Skip, I got 60 pitches for you. There's no freaking way. And, you know, to be honest with you, I thought Taillon was going to go yesterday. And when you brought up Bieber, I said, you know, if it's Bieber, then it could be Cortez. You know, I mean, there's no difference between either one of them pitching the same rest, except Bieber's coming up a little bit more of an arm injury than Cortez is. Maybe they were saving him. I don't know. But Aaron wanted to face Savali because I knew the Yankees can hit him. And like I said on Monday, stupidest thing in the world, Stanton's sacrifice fly gave me a little hope. And I actually said it on the podcast. I was like, you know, he had a good swing, and maybe that turns into something. Maybe it doesn't, but he's facing against a guy that doesn't throw hard, and that's where Stanton's bat speed is now. He's a great slider speed hitter now. When the guy throws 99 up in the zone, he can't do much, G.
Yeah. You know, the Stanton home run kind of made it matter-of-factly. They kind of just rolled through. the Cortez gave him enough good innings, and they rolled through. We're watching the game as we speak, and Houston just hit another home run, so they're up 3-0. Darren, just one more comment on the Yankee bullpen. So Hicks went down with the injury, so the Yankees made a couple of changes in the roster for this series. So Hicks is out. They brought in Oswaldo Peraza, the other shortstop. Now, they also did not carry Marwin Gonzalez and Lucas Ligi this round. And they added Montas, and they added Greg Wiesert also. So not only do we have Herman and Castro who aren't going to pitch, but I guess they wanted to load the bullpen up with more people that aren't going to pitch in Montas and Greg Wiesert. Yeah. So Now we got four guys. I guess they're just gonna cheer and wave some banners around and watch Peralta, Loaisiga, and Holmes blow their arms out. What do you got, Darren?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. So then now for the entire series, there'll be one left-handed pitcher out of the bullpen combined on two teams, and that's Peralta. The Astros throw nobody. The Yankees have the one guy. The only guy that you could see anybody coming out for, I know you can't do the one batter thing like you used to do to start, and I get it. But the one guy you're going to have to face is Alvarez. Not that I don't love Lickie either. I mean, I don't think much of him. But Wiesert's not going to pitch. He's not going to see the light of day unless they're down 10-1. If they're down 10-1, you can pitch Lickie. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. So I just thought it was an ominous move. I like the idea of playing Stanton in left. I like the idea of getting Carpenter's bat in the lineup. But the one thing to remember, too, as we watch this series, this Houston team's offense, though still very powerful on paper, you know, they were shut out for 18 innings in game three against the Mariners. They weren't exactly lighting it up. They got shut out twice in September by the Orioles. This is not a team that's been the typical Astro offense. I'm not saying they're not great. They won 100-plus games. Real good team. There's no doubt about it. But you know, the offense is not as dominant as it once was. And you're going to just see, you know, gone are the days where you can bring in Graham Lloyd to face Fred McGriff. You know, Peralta's going to have to face, you know, Alvarez and two righties. But, you know, it's I don't like the moves as much as I like Peraza. I like the Peraza move. I like a shortstop that can field. I think that's good.
I won't nitpick all the roster moves, but you know, now they have these extra four arms down there, and I kind of feel like one of them should not be on this team, and for this round, and Marwin Gonzalez should be up here, only because he can play basically seven positions, and you can kind of use him defensively. He's got a little speed. He's going to hit you for pat. You know, he gives you a lot of option, but you know, carrying another one of these relievers that you may probably not use doesn't do anything for me. Darren?
Yeah, my last point is he's a Kev-type player. He plays multiple positions. You put him everywhere. He's also an ex-Astro, and I love getting a guy going up against his former team. That's the reason why I would have liked to have kept Marwin Gonzalez, to be honest with you. I love a guy going up against his former team. I just do. I think it's one of those things that you have like a little advantage. Hey, you didn't want me anymore. Screw you. Here's a double in a big spot. Maybe not, but I like Marwin. I thought he does yeoman's work out there for us in a lot of different positions, and I think he could have been used a little bit better. So we made prediction in the other series. We should make a prediction on this one before we move forward. Kev, you have one more point. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what's going to be interesting is seeing what Boone does with the starting rotation. There is no off day between 5 and 6. So whoever goes 3 will have to go short rest on 7, unless you go in 5-man rotation.
Which they're not going to do. So who do you have in game 2?
To be honest, as much as I hate to say that, I would go Severino 2.
Me too.
Because he's off. He'll be on regular rest. If it's cold game 2, he's on short rest. Severino off the injury, I think you want game 2. 3's your, then you have the off day. 3, of course, is Cole.
Regular rest.
4, you come back with Cortez.
Yep.
On regular rest. 5, I guess you got to go with Taillon and Staff.
Yeah, but you can go Taillon for 2, Herman for 1. You can make that the bullpen game without, counting on Holmes. This is where we might see those four arms, Gino.
Montas.
Yeah, the only spot. Montas, you know, the big trade acquisition at the deadline. Anyway, we'll get me started there.
Yeah.
Then you get Seve for six and then Cole on short rest for seven.
I agree with you.
I agree also.
There's been talk of Cole for two. I don't like the idea of bringing him back in short rest in game two. Severino's been good, and he pitched really well against the Astros, and he knows this rivalry, and I don't think it's too much for him. I like him in the spot, and I think Cole coming back to the stadium is a nice job. I agree with you. That's a great point.
Plus, I don't think you can do Severino three and Severino short rest off the arm injury.
You can't. You'd be forced to go back to almost Cortez. If you wanted to go short rest with somebody on three, you go short rest three, short rest seven, which makes no sense.
Yep.
I think that you have to go Severino too. I agree.
I'm taking the Yankees in seven.
Kev?
I'm taking the Astros in six.
And I'm taking the Yankees in six. And here we are. I was going to say five, but I don't have the courage. So I'm saying six.
Okay. In the other series, Philadelphia and San Diego, they're tied one game apiece after today's game. The first game, Philadelphia wins 2-0. Darvish and Wheeler in a pitcher's duel is basically what you got. Darvish threw a great game. Only thing he did was two bad pitches. One was to Hopper in the fourth that went 368 feet, which is a pretty good home run. But then it was Schwarber in the sixth who hit a ball 488 feet into – it was a Titanic blast.
I don't believe it's landed yet, Jay.
It was a shot into the second deck in right field. Exit velo of 119.7, which according to them is the fifth hardest since 2008. It was just a mammoth home run. And then today, San Diego takes care of Philadelphia 8-5. Snell and Nola were good. However, Philadelphia was out to a 4-2 lead in the fourth. They were so-so. You know, both of them got through four.
What game did you ask Nola pitch that he was good, by the way? And Snell got victimized. I'll give you this. He got victimized on a ball in the sun for Soto. But nonetheless, he wasn't great either. But here's the thing, as a Padre fan, just to jump in real quick, love the fact that we got the split. And the reason why is because I like my advantage in game three. If I get the split and I didn't have to use Musgrove and I win the Snell-Nola matchup, I mean, and Wheeler, I mean, as a Met fan, Kev, you have to be kicking yourself. He looked unhittable yesterday. They got one hit off him. I mean, unreal. I mean, he didn't just look good. He looked great. I mean, it was a very good performance against a superior performance. It was like lights out because Darvish was really good.
He was excellent.
But just not good enough. So now you go back to Philly, Musgrove against Ranger Suarez. Now, Ranger could pitch a really good game. He had a pretty good season. It's not like he can't. But I like the idea that I could go up 2-1 in that series after three and then game four being a crapshoot. That's the way I felt about it. I was pretty excited, G.
Well, one thing in today's game, you know, we keep saying it, the Philadelphia bullpen was shaky. It seems like it's one really good game, one so-so game, one bad game. It's hit and miss with them. On the other side, San Diego was just lights out today in the bullpen. And Josh Hader struck out a postseason record 8 straight batters. And if Hader's going to pitch this good, they're going to be pretty hard to beat as we get to the late innings. Kev, anything on this series?
If Darren didn't say that, I was going to say it too. As a non-Padres fan, the split was big. Winning this Nola matchup, like you said, especially coming back from 4-0, you couldn't be happier as a Padre fan, I don't think.
No, I mean, the thing about it is that, and it's not that Nola doesn't have great stuff, but he's hittable. When Wheeler has his great stuff, he's not hittable. That's the difference, because he's got the ability to get that high strike and make it almost impossible. And so, you know, Blake Snell didn't give me a lot of excitement early on, but I thought it was a pretty nice way to get that split. And then you see what happens. And it's interesting now, because we talked about it before in the Yankee series. There's one day off for each team in each series. That's it. Game between game two and game three. Then you play five straight. So it's you know, the Yankees are going to struggle with their bullpen having to pitch, you know, everybody every single day. You know, the Phillies are going to have that same struggle. I mean, so are the Padres too, but it just seems like the Astros are a little deeper and the Padres are a little deeper than the Yanks and the Phils. G?
One thing that'll be interesting is that no matter who wins on either of these series, if both of these series go 6 and 7 games, it'll be interesting how games 1 and 2 of the World Series wind up being based on all of the performances that you're going to have with basically no rest as those series get deeper and deeper in. Kev?
I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sure it was riveting.
All right. Any other baseball stuff before we move to NFL?
No, I think I'm covered.
Nope.
Okay. So NFL week 6 is in the books. I'm going to go through a couple of games, and then we're going to highlight some other games. Washington beat Chicago 12-7. It's another Thursday awful night game. Brian Robinson, 5 weeks after being shot, comes back, scores a touchdown. Wentz is out 4 to 6 weeks, and Taylor Heineke will be in for my team. Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Darren?
Horrible game, and yet the last play, all exciting as he gets tackled at the half-yard line because he juggled it in the end zone. Mooney had a chance to win it for the Bears. He didn't get control of it on the first hitch, regathered himself, got tackled at the half-yard line. Very typical for how a horrible game should end, with a horrible play at the very end of the game. That's my only comment on that one, and obviously Taylor Heineke, who might be more exciting than Carson Wentz, so we'll see.
Indianapolis beat Jacksonville 34-27. Matt Ryan, a little bit of old magic with 3 touchdowns. They score with 17 seconds left. New England beats Cleveland 38-15. New England moves to 3-3. The Pats, you know, Belichick got win number 324. He tied Hallis. He's only 23 behind Shula for the number one spot. Zappi was good. I'm not sure how good, but he was good. It looks like the New England defense is pretty good. Darren?
The simple fact is the Cleveland defense is obviously not very good. And now they're talking quarterback controversy a little bit as Mac Jones has somehow fallen out of favor in New England. I don't know how true it is, but that's what I've read from a couple of different articles I've seen. Just interesting thought. Go ahead.
Atlanta beat San Francisco 28-14. Garoppolo had 2 interceptions. Mariota just keeps finding the fountain of youth. 129 yards, 2 touchdowns. He ran 6 times for 50 yards with a touchdown also. Kev?
This is one of the games I actually picked Atlanta in our picks last week. I actually got a win. You know, Atlanta got up 14-0. San Fran tied it at 14. And at that point, I'm thinking to myself, all right, San Fran shook off, you know, the long trip. It was a trap game, I thought. And then when Mariota got the touchdown right before the half to make it 21-14, San Fran just never showed up the second half.
And then the one thing I'll say about this game, Mariota was 13-for-14. I mean, you know, doesn't throw a lot, but he didn't miss a lot. He's not that old, and he's still pretty quick. And the best player that no one ever will talk about is A.J. Terrell. He's a dynamic, outstanding cornerback that really limits the team's best receiver on a regular basis. Deebo Samuel did not have much of a day. On the other side, Ayuk had the 2 touchdowns. I mean, Terrell's really good. G?
Yeah. The Chargers beat Denver 19-16 on the Monday night game. The Chargers moved to 4-2.
Suicide pool, baby.
Hopkins had a field goal in overtime for the win. He was 4-for-4 with an extra point. You got good performances from the defense. That's the first time in 27 games that Herbert did not throw for a touchdown. Anything from that game, guys?
Well, Hopkins kicking 4 field goals with a pulled hammy is pretty impressive. They were all short. So they made sure they were short, but you know, he's falling down after every kick.
He hit the net on all 4, though. And even the 37-38 means it was at least a 10 yards beyond it. So yeah, he would have been good from about 47, 48. And he thanked his Lord Jesus Christ right away as he got interviewed. You know, you gotta love that. God got him through it, baby.
And Russell Wilson hurting with the hammy now, too, to go with the lat.
Notice the Jet fans are going to sit there and point out what's going wrong with the Denver Broncos this week. Anyway, and that's me and Kev. Go ahead.
Seattle takes care of Arizona 19-9. Seattle moves to 3-3. You know, Pete Carroll has that Seattle team playing well. Kenny Walker Jr., the third, whatever his name actually is, 97 yards and a touchdown. Geno Smith, again, pretty good performance. I think we're really seeing that Arizona is not that good. They're 2-4. Darren?
Kyler Murray is not good. He'll be wearing an Oakland A's uniform within 2 years. Prediction. They still have his rights, right? Anyway. On to you, G.
The Rams take care of Carolina. 24-10. Rams are 3-3. The Rams trailed 10-7 at the half. I don't know. The whole team just see. I just feel like they're off a little bit. McCaffrey had 153 yards of Carolina's 203, which is one of the highest percentages of offense since 2003. And shortly after this, the next day, Robbie Anderson, who was into a little ruckus with his coach, gets traded the next day to Arizona. So that should be interesting. Yeah, anything, guys?
Yeah, Wilkes threw him off the team, actually, at halftime. He threw him off the field. And Carolina's only touchdown was defensive, just to tell you what kind of a slaughter that was. It was a pick for six against Stafford. So they really put up 3 points. Carolina's awful. But a couple of weeks ago, Gino, you said that the Carolina looked like they were a team on the move. I was going to keep pointing that out every week. Go ahead.
Okay. Cincinnati beats New Orleans 30-26. Cincinnati moves to 3-3. Burrow threw for 300 with three touchdowns. Jamar Chase had 132-2. Cincinnati rallied down 9 in the final 4 minutes for the win. Anything from you guys on Cincinnati?
You know, I thought the Saints ran the ball well against them, which and it wasn't like Taysom Hill. Kamara had a pretty good game. We haven't seen that in a little while with the injuries and stuff like that. Saints are a 2-4 team right now. You know, it's a team that some people thought were going to win that division. They still might because the leader is only 3-3. Montez comes in and gives up a home run, 4-1. But besides that, I mean, you know, the Bengals seem like they're catching stride offensively. If they kind of gain that, I think that they're going to be in pretty good shape going forward in that division. Any thoughts, Kev?
The Bengals did what they had to do to pull out a win. Beautiful play. Burrow to Chase for 60 yards to give them the lead after the three and out and the punt by New Orleans. New Orleans got down to the 41 and 3rd and 10. Dalton takes the sack, and that's a 4th and 17 and game over.
Yeah.
Okay. Minnesota moves to 5-1 with a 24-16 win over Miami. Cousins and Cook played very well for them. Bridgewater was at quarterback. It just wasn't enough. Threw 2 interceptions. Miami moves to 3-3. Anything from you guys?
Hey, take a look. The Fish outgained the Vikings 458 to 234. But the three turnovers. The only stat you need to know in an NFL game is turnover battle. That's really it. Whoever wins the turnover battle, especially when it's 3-0, wins the game.
One side of the game. Minnesota, again, they win every week, and they never impress me.
Yep.
Okay, elsewhere. Pittsburgh with a big upset over Tampa Bay.
Kev's got something to say. I know he does.
Pittsburgh just stunned Tampa Bay with this game. Kev?
F you, Tom Brady.
That's all I needed.
Pittsburgh, no Minka Fitzpatrick, no TJ Watt. Three cornerbacks out. You're out partying Friday night at Robert Kraft's wedding, and you're going to have the gall to show up and yell at the offensive linemen? They're lucky they didn't decide to do a no block and just have Brady get creamed. Come on. How do you not take advantage of that team and put up 40? That's a terrible job by Tom Brady.
Listen. Pittsburgh had to go back to Trubisky, who, by the way, down the stretch, had a couple of nice third down conversions to win that game. Stunningly enough. What Kev says is right. It doesn't look like Brady is giving the full effort for this team, and I think it's pretty clear.
Maybe he should stay retired.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, he doesn't seem like he cares. I mean, he's out there and he's not practicing part of the week. He's taking Friday off before the game for a wedding. I mean, there's things that he doesn't have the commitment that a quarterback needs to have. I'm not trying to say he's not the greatest of all time. I hate him, but he's at least in that in the conversation. If he's not one, he's one, two, or three, depending on how you feel about the whole thing. But I don't really feel like he's got that commitment that right now. And no. Pittsburgh, you know what? Tomlin's gonna have him playing hard every week. They're not good, but Tomlin will have him playing hard. Jake?
Okay, so before we move to the two New York teams, the two big games on the board, we saw Buffalo beat Kansas City 24-20. Buffalo moves to 5-1, Kansas City to 4-2. Josh Allen threw for 329 and 3. Diggs had a big day with 148 yards. Mahomes threw an interception with 51 seconds left. This is probably, if all goes the way we think it is, a preview of the AFC Championship game. Darren, anything on this?
I got a few points on this. Number one, the hurdle by Allen. Unbelievably impressive for a man his size to do what he did, right? There's a street in Buffalo called Hurdle Street, H-E-R-T-E-L. And they turned it to hurdle. They changed it, and they have Josh Allen jumping over it. It's unbelievably impressive, awesome. Right? It's really cool. Mahomes also threw an interception on the first drive of the game in the red zone. I think he's trying to force things a little bit. He just, you know, if Kelce's covered, he doesn't have that much faith in the receivers. The one thing I'll say about this matchup, though, it's going to get even better the Chiefs were very unhealthy on defense in this matchup. And the Bills were too. Jordan Poyer was not cleared to fly. He drove 15 hours because somehow with a collapsed lung, you can't fly, but you can play football. I don't know how it works, right? But apparently he can play football. This guy got a car service and drove 15 hours to the game because he wasn't going to miss the Bills-Chiefs game. That's the kind of guy you want on your team. And as he gets healthier – and other Bills on their defense get healthier. And the same thing with the Chiefs because they were missing two of their three starting cornerbacks. And Gabe was out for his last game of his suspension. I think that the offenses will click a little better, and I think the defenses will be better. I think this – every time they play, I think it's just a great game. I feel like I'm watching two teams that are playing chess while everybody else in the league is playing checkers. And it's kind of fun to watch. Kev?
Yeah, even with those defensive injuries by both teams, they – definitely didn't expect to see 24-20. A lot more low scoring than any of us thought. Mahomes, a couple of mistakes. You know, one of the few bad games, if you even want to call it a bad game, that I've seen Mahomes ever play. You know, just shows he's human, I guess.
And he still made some amazing plays while he was at it. He just had a couple of, bad decisions.
Yeah, and Allen's hurdle – yeah, impressive, but boy, if you're a Buffalo fan, do you really want to see him hurdling defenders?
Well, probably not if he gets hurt, but yeah.
Okay, in the NFC, the big game was Philadelphia beating Dallas 26-17. Philadelphia moves to 6-0. Dallas is at 4-2. Jalen Hurts threw for 155 and 2. Sanders had a touchdown. Brown had a touchdown. Devonta Smith had a touchdown. They led 20-0 at the half. At one point, Dallas came back to score 17. Wasn't enough. In the second quarter, the Eagles have outscored their opponents 112-27. So they just like getting out to these leads. The only thing of note for me is Cooper Rush threw three interceptions, two of them to C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and Philadelphia just keeps rolling. Kev?
Yeah, it was a step up for Cooper to play against Philly. He showed that, yeah, he's probably a backup quarterback in the NFL. Now, if you're Dallas and you told me Cooper Rush is going to go 4-1 with Dak out, you couldn't be more thrilled. I think watching Dallas play the last couple of weeks, hopefully Dak's paid attention and hopefully McCarthy's paid attention if you're a Dallas fan and realize that we need to rely on Zeke and Pollard and open up some easier passing lanes for Dak by using the run, setting up play action, and don't have Dak drop back 40 to 50 times a game and throw it. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, Micah Parsons is the most dynamic pass rusher in the league right now. When Lane Johnson went down, the game changed. It was 20-0. Lane Johnson goes down. All of a sudden, backup tackle comes in, and Micah Parsons treated him like he was a rag doll. He can't be blocked. He's that good. On the other side, the Eagle front four, and they rotate like seven guys, equally dynamic. It made it really tough to run the ball. Cooper Rush didn't have the running game going, forced to throw it. Obviously, he's not going to be a pocket quarterback for an entire game and playing from behind and through the three picks. I still thought he played relatively well for what he was up against. Dallas is still pretty good. I mean, they lost this game, but they showed some heart coming back. I didn't expect it to even be close. I had Philly laying six, and I was like, oh, this is easy, 20-0. All of a sudden, making me sweat. I wasn't happy about it. But, you know, two really good teams. Gino said that the Cowboys were going to collapse. Well, this could be the start of it, G. The first hot take.
We'll see. In other NFC East news, the Giants beat Baltimore 24-20. The Giants moved to 5-1. It's another big win for the Giants. They rallied down from 10. Their five wins surpasses their best since 2021. I'm trying hard to really give the Giants props, but, you know, the first half, Baltimore outgained them 256 to 90 in total yards, but the Giants keep finding ways to win. Daniel Jones is good again. He's not great, but he's good. Barkley scores. They finally get Wandale Robinson a touchdown. Darren?
I mean, yeah, you brought the first half. I mean, even for the whole game, you know, it was 406 to 238, you know, yardage. The big difference to me was 10 penalties on the Ravens to 3 on the Giants and 2 turnovers to 1 for the Ravens and the Giants. Kev brought it up before. The team that turns the ball over generally loses these games. You know, Kenyon Drake was good. You know, Andrews seems like he's unguardable in most games unless Sauce is guarding him. That was for you, Kev. And I got to be honest, being forced to throw Lamar Jackson barely threw 50%. He's not a great, accurate quarterback. He's a great runner. And because the Giants have that good front and with Leonard Williams back, I think it was really kind of a difference maker, you know, in trying to, you know, neutralize Lamar a little bit and keep his legs on the wraps. And I thought they did a decent job. Once again, Barkley was he's good. He's real good. And Jones is okay. And Dable gets the maximum out of this team. Kev?
Yeah, another gritty performance for the Giants. They hung in there, kept it close enough, and waited for Baltimore to make mistakes. And that's what Baltimore's done this year. I mean, third time they've blown a double-digit lead this year. All three losses. Hard to believe what's going on with the Ravens and how they keep blowing these games. But give the Giants credit. Somehow they're 5-1.
Got to play who's on your schedule. Got to play them.
Yep.
All right, and the other New York team, the Jets, with a big win over Green Bay, 27-10. Jets moved to 4-2. Green Bay to 3-3. Breece Hall with 116 yards and a touchdown. The Jets outrushed Green Bay 179-16. It's the Jets' best start since 2015 through six games. Rodgers is so-so. Kev,
I'll hand it off. J-E-T-S. As a Jet fan, you got to be loving this. This is fun to watch. The young players, you mentioned Breece Hall. Incredible. The AFC, was the AFC or just the NFL Defensive Player of the Week?
AFC, but still, AFC. Still very good.
Quentin Williams, all over the place. Showed on, probably was what was their biggest game of the year. Showed up, played great. His brother Quincy played great. Curry off the IL after not playing last year at all because of that blood disorder. He made a few plays. The defensive back, Sauce, DJ Reed. No, Rodgers didn't have too many places to throw to, and the line did a real good job of pressuring him. And what's real nice is that it feels like the Jets are getting pressure and getting sacks without having to blitz. they were getting there with a four-man rush. Guess what? Then they'll say you can guard five receivers at most with seven defenders. And when you can put Sauce one-on-one, when Reed doesn't need much help, maybe bring the safety over. You've got the advantage. And this is just going to be a fun team to watch. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, Carl Lawson didn't have a lot of stats in this game, but he collapsed that pocket so much on those twists and those shifts that freed up Rankins for a sack and freed up Quinnen for a sack on the looper. They kept running the same play. Carl would just come in, take on two guys. Somebody would sweep around, and the Packers seemed to have no answer for it. It was interesting. I just thought that the drive after the Packers cut it to 17-10, where they came back down the field and scored to start the fourth quarter on that drive, I thought that was the key to the whole game. They went right back up 24-10, took the two-touchdown lead again, never trailed in the game. And, Rodgers did not have much of a game. Tanyan was really the only weapon he was able to utilize. The running game, you stopped Dylan and you stopped, Jones, like nothing. It was really impressive. I was very, very excited watching that game. Zach didn't do anything. He was 10 for 18. I mean, he didn't do much. But Corey Davis caught two big passes. It helped.
Yeah, that drive, like you said, he was only 4 for 6 in the second half.
Yeah, he didn't have to throw much.
He didn't have to throw. At 24-10, also to come out, a 13-play drive to kick the field goal to go up by 3 scores, take 6.5 off. All the plays were runs.
Yep.
And they were basically runs up the middle. But Breece and Carter can move the piles. And another great game by Elijah Vera Tucker. I mean, the guy's got to be one of the unsung heroes on the Jet team. The way he has moved all over the line and just steps up week after week. Another good game by Brown on the other side. He's showing that he's such a key player.
Statistically, best game by Lakin Tomlinson of the year, by the way. You don't talk much about offensive guards, but the PFF performance, he was the best lineman according to the stats on the Jets. You didn't notice him. He didn't commit a hold. He didn't move early, and they ran the ball up the middle. So something went right.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Okay, moving to week 7. It's a big bye week. This is one of those crazy bye weeks. Buffalo, Minnesota, Philadelphia, and the Rams all on the bye. That's a combined 19-5 record. So there's a lot of these big teams are resting this week. Only really a couple of spotlights for me. Atlanta's at Cincinnati. See if Cincinnati can build on the win, get on the winning side. Kansas City's at San Francisco. And then the Giants are at Jacksonville and the Jets are at Denver. Guys, anything you want to add on some of these games this week?
I think the only matchup of winning records is Colts 3-2-1 at the Titans 3-2. Just a bad week of football. Bad primetime matchups too this week.
Oh, hard.
Thursday night has company. Sunday night you've got Steelers Dolphins. Monday night you got Bears Patriots. Just an awful week of watching TV, watching football.
Thank God the baseball playoffs are on. I know that the games aren't big, but New Orleans, Arizona, these two, both teams are 2-4, both were thought of decent. The loser is basically 2-5 and probably out. That's the Thursday night game. Again, it's not a
dreaded
good game.
It's a dreaded loser leaves town match.
It's the dreaded loser leaves town match, absolutely. Kev talked about Indy and Tennessee, which is an interesting match. Tennessee at home coming off the bye. See how they play off the bye. I think the Giants and the Jets both have to watch this week. The Giants more than the Jets. I think that the Giants could have trouble in Jacksonville. I think this is one of those games where you don't expect it, and Jacksonville's going to play really well against them. The only reason why I'm a little less nervous about the Jets, even though they're a dog in this game, is because Denver played a physical, grueling, brutal matchup in a short week. It's the only reason why I'm not petrified about the Jets going across the country. And I think San Francisco, Kansas City matchup of the Super Bowl, first time they've met since the Super Bowl. Rizzo just went yard 4-2. They haven't played since the Super Bowl. So Garoppolo and Mahomes got to go at each other again. A lot of injuries on that San Francisco defense. Chicago, New England Monday night. I mean, if you didn't know Chicago was going to suck before the season started, you weren't paying attention. Sorry. And New England, I know everybody loves Mac Jones coming in, but they're not that good either. I mean, the Sunday night game, for Sunday night to have Pittsburgh, when you knew it was going to be Trubisky or Pickett, come on. I mean, what were they thinking in the beginning of the year? What the heck were they thinking? Not that there are a lot of great matchups, but wow, they picked two of the worst ones for Sunday and Monday. Gee.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move over to college football.
Okay.
Darren, you want to start us off?
We'll do a quick recap here on the college football landscape last week. We had some amazing games. I'm gonna mention a few, and then I'm going to go to Tennessee, Alabama. I'm going to let my friend Kev take over on that one because you were so riveted by it that I have stats on it too, but I'm going to let you talk about it because there was one that you couldn't stop talking about. Start off the early game. Michigan blows out number 5. Michigan blows out number 10 Penn State. Game was 16-14 at the half, ended 41-17. 42 minutes of possession to 18 for Michigan. They outgained them 563 to 268. I, of course, took Penn State plus the 6. Good pick. Illinois beat the crap out of Minnesota. Minnesota led 14-13, lost 26-14 in this game. Once again, 40 minutes of possession for Illinois, 20 for the Gophers. One-sided performance. Georgia getting back to blowing people out. They beat Vandy like they didn't exist, 55-0. I don't know if Vandy got off the bus. Syracuse, NC State. Syracuse, the 18, beat the 15 NC State. Cuse is 6-0. And despite they turned it over twice, and NC State didn't. Tucker had a good rushing game. Schrader rushed the ball really well and threw well for 210 and 2 touchdowns. Best Syracuse team we've seen in a long time. McPherson's gone, but they're pretty good. Tennessee, Alabama. Kev, give me your synopsis on this freaking epic third Saturday in October, man.
Oh, wait. I think the goalpost just arrived in Glen Rock, New Jersey.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, man, that the rivalries that happen in some of these leagues and the SEC in particular are amazing. Kev?
What an incredible game. Back and forth, high scoring, just unbelievable. Total yards, 569 for Alabama, 567 for Tennessee. Jalin Hyatt, 6 catches for 207 and 5 touchdowns. What was amazing, it was 42-42. It was back and forth a lot. Tennessee had a 21-7 lead early. Alabama, of course, stays in it. Back and forth. And Tennessee loses the fumble. Alabama picks it up, returns for a touchdown. They make it 49-42. And you're thinking, up there's the momentum swing. That's going to propel. And Tennessee comes back with a touchdown. Alabama gets the ball, drives down, stalls a little bit in the 30s, and Will Reichard misses a 50-yard field goal with only 15 seconds left. And you're thinking, okay, 15 seconds, what can Tennessee really do? Well, an 18-yard pass and a 27-yard pass that took only 13 seconds, very reminiscent of the Kansas City Chiefs last year in the playoffs. Big help, too, was the automatic stopping of the clock with the first down. It sort of gives you a chance to call timeout, with the clock stopping right away. You don't have that extra second running off, maybe as you're trying to get the referee's attention to stop the clock. And Chase McGrath with a 40-yard field goal to seal off the bedlam. And I think it was well worth the $100,000 fine.
Yep.
That they get for storming the field. And I think, especially after being down at South Carolina and sensing the atmosphere of an SEC game, I can't imagine being in that crowd and that excitement. That must have been incredible to be there.
15 Darren? Straight Saban had beaten them. They hadn't won against Alabama. This is a rivalry that's been third Saturday in October forever, okay? And they hadn't won since Saban arrived. it's like you don't call it a rivalry at that point. You call it a massacre. And all of a sudden for this team to rise up, Hooker had a hell of a game, played really well. I mean, we talked about it last week with Kelsey. 4 touchdowns, 7 catches, 25 yards. The way Hyatt did it was 6 receptions for 5 touchdowns and 207 yards. More what you would expect on a 4 or 5 touchdown game than what we originally saw. Number 6 beats number 3. Now you switch them in the polls now. Tennessee's the 3. Alabama's the 6, but really awesome game. Gee, any comment on this besides the goalpost?
No.
Good enough. Another exciting one. TCU, biggest game in Fort Worth in forever. They come back and beat Oklahoma State 43-40 in overtime. They were down 24-7, and in the fourth quarter were down 30-16. Max Duggan, who's never going to impress you overly with his arm strength or anything like that, can run and he can throw. He threw for 286, I believe it was, and led them back. You know, the TCU defense, which you don't talk much in the Big 12, you know, held Oklahoma State to 6 points in the second half, which, and it's a good offensive team. So you don't expect to see TCU on top of the Big 12, especially Gary Patterson's first year out. Sonny Dykes comes in. You know, who the hell knows how well he's going to do? He's got this team flying right now. TCU, the 13, upsets number 8 Oklahoma State in overtime.
Yeah, the big play there, the second overtime, Oklahoma State gets the ball first to start the second overtime. Yep. First play, holding.
Yep, that's go back 10 yards, absolutely.
Sends back 3 incomplete passes later, still for the field goal, sets it up for TCU, and Kendre Miller to score the touchdown to win it.
Yep, absolutely. And really, you know, good. It's good brand of ball, a good amount of defense, and two teams you don't expect to be on top of this division, but they are. Clemson holds off Florida State. This game was 34-14. Florida State scores the 2 late touchdowns to make it close for you guys that picked Clemson minus 4.5, I believe. But you got 3. You got your cover. It doesn't matter. Gino, you only get the cover if you can pronounce the quarterback's name.
Ukulele.
Close enough. He's not a ukulele, but it's close enough. Florida State's just not back yet, but we'll see what happens. Kentucky, number 22, beats Mississippi State 27-17. Levis comes back, has a really nice game. The Kentucky defense was the difference in this game. Mississippi State completes a lot of passes that were all short. They really couldn't move the ball up and down the field like they normally do. Mississippi State's a Jekyll and Hyde team, very good at home, a little erratic on the road, and that showed. Kentucky, when they have their quarterback, is a good team. South Carolina had the pleasure of playing them without their quarterback.
Without Levis, yes.
Stanford beat Notre Dame. Neither team ranked, but no one expected this. Kev had Stanford covering, so he had it, but no one expected this. First FBS win of the year for Stanford. Their only win was against the FCS school. Did not expect that to be the case today, but Notre Dame, they play great against some teams, and sometimes they don't show up. And quarterback play is a real issue. Probably the game of the day that I'm going to close with. Utah 43, or the second game of the day besides besides Tennessee. Utah 43, USC 42. USC led throughout most of this game, okay? Utah playing from behind all night. And we talked about it last week, about going for 2 with 4 minutes and change to go. Utah did it correctly. 48 seconds to go, they cut it to 1. And they say, we're not stopping USC all night. We're going for 2 right here. The quarterback, I'm blanking on his name, is Gritty.
Cameron Rising.
Yep, Rising. He's a very, very gritty player. He kept coming back all night, got him in to the 2-point conversion. Utah, and we said it last week, not easy to win in Salt Lake. Just not. Kev?
Yeah, the 15-play, 75-yard drive for that touchdown, especially with that number of plays, that much time, that defense is dead. That's the spot you go for 2. No doubt about it.
And with 40 seconds left, I love the idea you go for the win right there because, you know what, USC is just on paper a little more talented than you. You got to steal the win when you can take it. And it's never easy to win there. Kev?
You go into overtime, it's a crapshoot. You feel like USC has scored pretty easily throughout the game. So have you. I mean, you both have put up, 42, 43 points. So, it's just – you take advantage of a tired defense there. You don't give a chance to rest up a little bit before overtime.
It's a weird thing. I was watching a lot of that game. I just was. And Utah seemed like they had to work so much harder than USC to score their points. Seems like USC just makes a big play, and all of a sudden they're in Utah territory. Maybe it's a second down, and they make another big play. I mean, it's just USC is so good. So it's going to be it's cool to see that upset happen right there. So number 20 knocked off number 7. Those are the games I wanted to highlight from last week. These are the big games upcoming this week. Ole Miss goes to LSU. Normally, LSU had a nice win against Florida. Ole Miss is undefeated, ranked 7th in the country. we don't live down there. This is a humongous rivalry. Ole Miss's biggest rival is LSU besides Mississippi State. They don't like each other. And Death Valley, never an easy place to play. Texas heads to Oklahoma State. Number 20 heads to number 11. Will Okie State rebound? I mean, at home, you expect that they will. Texas has been up and down a little bit. Good team, not great every single week. Kev?
But the quarterback's back last week.
Yeah, he played well last week, but not great. Iowa State's not exactly a world beater. They had to come back to beat him 24-21. So a little interesting in that, but the quarterback is back. UCLA, Oregon. Chip Kelly goes home again. Number nine UCLA versus number 10 Oregon. UCLA's won 9 in a row, including last season. Won the last 3 last year, 6-0 this year. Back to prominence for the first time in forever. Oregon has straightened things out since that first week of the season where they got bombed by Georgia and we thought that they were done for. And the quarterback matchup of DTR versus Nix, one of the best quarterback matchups we'll see all week this week, maybe all year. These are two guys up for the Heisman. So UCLA and Oregon, 3:30 primetime game is a big deal. Mississippi State, 24, goes to Alabama, 6. Mississippi State has struggled on the road, like we said. Alabama could be very angry this week. Kev?
Yeah, but the tragedy you heard about today, maybe you haven't.
I have not.
Walk-on player, Sam Westmoreland, 18 years old, died today.
What team?
For Mississippi State.
I did not hear
Westmoreland.
That I did not get to. Wow.
I just saw that about 4 o'clock this afternoon. He's a freshman offensive lineman.
That's a shame. Oh, my goodness. Hate to see 18-year-olds, you know.
Yeah, they haven't announced the cause of death yet or anything.
That's scary stuff. That's just bad news. Yep. The one thing about this, the little interesting tidbit on this game is when you think of all the schools in the SEC, Alabama and Auburn or Tennessee and Vandy or Florida and Georgia, the two schools in the closest proximity that are actually campuses closest together are Mississippi State and Alabama. There's actually one little county in Mississippi that's all Alabama fans. It's a weird thing. I don't know. But it's just a little tidbit about this matchup. Hard to imagine Alabama not coming out angry this week. Just my thoughts at home. Kansas State heads to TCU. 17 goes to 8. If you'd have told me in the beginning of the year, K-State and TCU would be 1-2 in this conference, people would have shot me. These teams are the only two undefeated teams left in the league. TCU gets to host this game again. 2 weeks in a row for the Horny Toads getting to host a major opponent. Two solid offensive, two solid quarterbacks, Martinez and Duggan. Kev liked the Horny Toads line. And both teams play pretty good defense for a league that's not known for it. Actually could be a great matchup, and the winner will be in the driver's seat for a chance to get into that, that playoff, have a shot at the playoff anyway. K-State does have a slip up against Tulane despite all their other big wins. Texas A&M and South Carolina, just for Kev. South Carolina, 3-point dog at home.
Yep.
They have the better record. They're 4-2 against a 3-3 A&M squad. Kev, what do we think?
I'm taking Carolina plus the points. They got to win this game.
You love that running back.
Team is going to be rocking.
You love that running back. And finally, the game of the week this week, boys. And I'm going to ask you to give me a pick. No spread. Straight up. Undefeated 14th-ranked Syracuse goes to undefeated 5th-ranked Clemson. Death Valley, 6-0, plays 7-0, 37 straight home wins for Clemson, okay? Two very good defenses, and they both play really good at quarterback. I think Clemson average has given up 13.2 points a game, and I think Syracuse is somewhere around 17 and change. Clemson is a 13.5 point choice, but you don't have to even get into that. I'm going to start with you, Gino. Syracuse or Clemson, who walks away? Who walks out of out of Clemson with the win?
Clemson. And I'm taking the point spread. Clemson minus the 13.5. It's a 2-touchdown game. Clemson continues the roll with their home winning streak.
Kev.
Clemson should be there. Syracuse, out of nowhere. This is a big step up for Syracuse. I don't think they're ready yet. Clemson wins this one easily.
Last year they played in Syracuse. Final score 17-14 Clemson. And I still think Clemson wins this game by probably double digits. I agree with you. I don't know if it'll be 14. It might be 10. I think it'll be a good game. I don't think this is the best Clemson team we've seen. I think they're good. I don't think they're great offensively. And I think Syracuse is a pretty good defensive team, but I think there's a tough matchup. Kev?
Just go to baseball for a second. Hey, Gino, they're emptying the bullpen.
We're seeing the guys you don't normally see.
Miguel Castro pitching, who Gino was asking for last series.
Gino wants to see Castro pitch every night.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, no, that was the last game I was covering. So that's the college football. Do we want to get into picks, G? You want to lead the way?
Yep. Let's get into college football picks. So last week, Darren was 0-3.
I killed it.
Kevin and Gino were 2-3. On the season, the only one over 500 at the moment is me, which is 11-18. Darren 7-18. Kevin 5-18. We got to do better than this, boys.
You're 11-7. I'm 7-11. Kev 5-13. This is all week.
Kev, do you want to
last week was a turnaround. Now we're ready to roll here.
All right, start it off.
First game, I think we've mentioned actually two of the three games here. You mentioned Mississippi State at Alabama. 21-point spread. Alabama has squeaked by Texas and Texas A&M. And the only other good team they've beaten, they beat Arkansas by 23. Yeah, they're coming off a loss. A fun game. But I think Mississippi State hangs in there close enough. I'm taking Mississippi State plus the 21. Second game you mentioned was TCU, Kansas State. I've got that at 3.5. For TCU, yep. Because they're home, I think TCU covers that. I have TCU minus the 3.5. And the third game I've got, Penn State, off the blowout loss to Michigan. They're playing Minnesota at home. Minnesota's is coming in on a 2-game losing streak. Have not looked good the last 2 weeks. I think Penn State rights the ship this week. I'll take Penn State minus the 4.
All right.
Okay.
Darren?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to start in the ACC where Duke is going to get 9 at Miami. I can't believe it. Duke's still playing pretty well. They lost by 3 last week in a very good game against North Carolina. Really good matchup. Miami struggled against a very bad Vatek team. I'm going to take Duke plus the 9. Maryland laying 13.5 against Northwestern as we move to the Big Ten. Northwestern just isn't very good, and I think Maryland actually is pretty good, especially at home. I like their chances. I think Maryland wins this game by 20. And my third game is one we mentioned earlier, Ole Miss LSU. LSU somehow is a favorite in this matchup in my spread by 2. I am going to take Ole Miss plus the 2 on the road. I think they're a little bit better than LSU. Tennessee went down to LSU just a couple weeks ago and beat them 43-10. If this was a primetime game, I wouldn't touch it, but since they're playing during the day, I'm taking Ole Miss plus 2. They win it outright. I don't want the 2 points. Gino.
My first game, I'm going head-to-head against Kev. I think Alabama rebounds. I think they blow the doors off Mississippi State. I'm taking Alabama minus the 21. My second game is a Pac-12 matchup. I think it's time to see Oregon go to 6-1. I'm taking Oregon at home minus the 6 against UCLA. And my third game is an ACC game. I'm back on the Wake Forest bandwagon, and I'm taking Wake Forest minus the 20.5 against BC. BC isn't that great. They're 2-4. I think Wake Forest takes over. I think this is 4-touchdown game. Wake Forest minus the 20.5 is my final pick for this week.
We're going to try to do better for you people.
Let's move to some NFL picks. Last year, Gino and Darren were 2-3. Kevin, 1-3. The only one of us at 50% or better is Darren, who is 9-18.
Not good.
Gino and Kevin, both 6-18. Again, boys, we have to do better than this. Kev, why don't you lead the way for the NFL week number 7?
Oh, it was tough coming up with games this week. So much crap on the schedule this weekend. The only matchup with two winning teams that I've got, Tennessee and the Colts. I've got the spread at 2.5 for Tennessee.
Yep.
Off the bye week, I think Tennessee does enough to – you would think they would win by at least a field goal. I got the Titans minus a 2.5. Second pick, off a loss to the Jets. I think the Green Bay Packers come out a little pissed off. They need to get their running game going. Make it a little easier for Rodgers to throw some balls there or complete some passes. And Washington got Taylor Heineke starting. I'll take Green Bay minus the 5.
Six and a half.
Is there six and a half up to? Yeah, I'll still take six. I'll still do 6.5. Third game is going back and forth. I had Chiefs minus 2.5 at San Fran, but I'm going with as my third pick. I'm going to take the Giants. I've got them as road dogs at Jacksonville. I don't understand how they're a road dog. I'm taking the Giants to win outright, but I'll take the points anyway.
It's Giants plus 3.5.
Yep. I forgot to mention that part. Yeah, I'll take the 3.5.
Hey, I am going with my first one. I'm taking the Chargers minus 6.5 against Seattle. I kind of like the way they wound up winning that game last week. I don't think the Seahawks are that good. They're going to go up and down. I know Geno Smith's having a good year right now. I'm taking the Chargers minus the 6.5 at home. My second pick, I'm taking the Cowboys, who I buried in week one. Dallas minus the 7.5 home against the Lions. It's actually 7, so minus the 7. That's my second pick. And my third pick, and I hope you guys aren't going to kill me, I am taking the Jets. I'm taking the Jets plus the 1.5.
Why? Don't do it. Don't do it.
It's actually at this moment, there must be a lot of money going on the Jets because it's a pick'em game at the moment. I'm taking the Jets to win the game. Those are my three picks for this week. Darren, to you.
I'm going to start off. My best bet of the week would be the Dolphins laying 7 against the Steelers on Sunday night. I think Tua back. I think that the Dolphins will win this game. Trubisky has a good chance of starting, which makes anybody nervous. I think that the Dolphins D-line will play well, and I think that they will win this game by 10-14. My second pick, I'm taking the Ravens laying 6 against the Browns. I think that the Ravens bounce back. The Browns showed me nothing last week. Nothing. They were awful. And how do you lose 38-15 at home to Zappy? What the heck is that? That was horrendous. Jacoby Brissett, I don't know. He's going to come out and throw 4 touchdowns now. But I think that Baltimore is much better than Cleveland. I think that they're going to come off angry. And I think that Lamar Jackson is going to run circles. I think he's going to win. My third matchup is head-to-head against Kev and not the matchup you're thinking. I'm taking the Jags to beat the Giants. And really, I don't know why. I feel like this is a rough game for the Giants. I think the Jags come out a little hungry. I think they win by a score. I think they win by 7. So I'll lay the 3.5. I wanted to go. It was either that or going with you with Tennessee. So I was back and forth on it. And I'm going to go against you. I'm going to take the Jags, which means one of us are going to win this week, Kev. G?
I got 2 parlay picks for you.
Sure.
Darren, you hit this parlay last week. You could take the Jets and Giants on the money line this week. It's plus 358. I know you hit one last week with it. It's probably a good one. And then the other one is a 4-team money line parlay. It's Green Bay, Dallas, Cincinnati, and Tampa Bay. And that's the plus 226. Those are my 2 bets for this week. Darren, Kevin, anything else?
No.
No, we're good. Guys, we know that the NBA is still tipping off tonight. We know NHL's a little bit into the season. Most teams will play 2-3. Some have even played 4 games. We will get more into that as baseball winds down. Right now, you know, as we get into the marathon of those 2 sports, we will cover them, and we'll probably cover a little bit more than you want of college basketball as well throughout the season, just because it happens to be a sport that the 3 of us have a little bit of passion toward. But without further ado, guys, I mean, here it is, wrapping it up. We're the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren, along with Kevin and Gino. Download our podcast wherever you can get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, whatever you like. Tune in. You have questions, please send them out to us. If you have comments, please let us know. If you like our stuff, send it around. Get it out to as many people as possible and let us know what you want us to talk about, because we'd love to do so. We have a lot of fun doing it, and we just want to keep that going and make sure that we're having other people have fun listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the show. So, again, without further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.